Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast on RadioMD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded it from. This is the B segment, 921B, which means we've been doing this more than 18 years, I guess. And our guest is a wonderful guest. But before I tell you what she is, let me tell you, thank you for downloading us. Do tell your friends about us and rate us. 51,000 of you a week can't be all wrong. And I hope we keep making it exciting, fun, as well as informative. The A segments are the news of the week, and especially what it means to you so you can live at the top of your curve. The B, great guests, like the one today, Dr. Tali Landau-Aronoff, wrote a book called Hell and Back. You can get it at hellandbackbook.com. Find out more about her. She does Instagram and Facebook, hellandbackbook.com. It's about, well, to let her tell you, but she's a pediatric ENT surgeon, which means ear, nose, and throat, deals with difficult airways as well as ears, nose, and throat. And this is the story of a wife and mother, doctor and patient, and dragon slayer. There's a great picture of her on a motorcycle. I don't know if that's actually her on the motorcycle on the front cover, but it's a wonderful book. And I am going to start out with one of the great questions. She talks about insomnia after she develops whatever she developed, and we'll let her tell you about that. But she was asked to lie supine, which means on her back, and somehow was able to watch TV while lying on her back. And I wanted to find out where the heck she had the TV that she saw on Netflix and HBO, etc., and went through many series of those on her back. Was the TV on the ceiling, or where was the TV? So welcome, Dr. Landau.
Thank you so much for having me. I was actually, that was immediately after my bilateral mastectomy, so you're just very limited because you have drains and you have to sleep on your back. Just there is no way to flip over and watch TV that way. So my parents in the loft of their townhouse had a couch, so I wasn't completely flat. I was at an incline, and they had a couch, and the television was at the foot of the couch. And so they had Roku, and I really couldn't sleep because you're taking a lot of steroids as chemo goes on as well. And so I was, you know, basically that was my means of getting through the night instead of waking everybody up.
So we're talking with Dr. Landau, a pediatric ENT surgeon, about her episode with breast cancer. And it occurred right after something else in her family, which I'll let her tell you about in a second. And this is a story that's a fascinating story written with a tongue-in-cheek bent on how she got through this, what it's like to be a physician as a patient, and what it taught her about what she should do with patients. Let's first talk, this was a difficult time in your life. So how did you, was humor the way you got through with it? Tell us a little bit about the time in your life and what you did to get through it.
So what happened at that time was actually I had just given birth to my third daughter, and that was already a very shocking reality because I was always 100% healthy. I operated with my previous two children, I think on the Friday before I had them on a Sunday, and I never took a sick day. And then one night when I was 34 weeks pregnant with my daughter, I went in after office hours just for a routine checkup, only to find out that my blood pressure was 190 over 100. And so ultimately I had preeclampsia, and I ended up having
Hold on a second. So you got to explain the medical term. Preeclampsia means what?
So preeclampsia is a condition in which because of something that's going on with the placenta feeding the baby, your body is trying to drive more blood to the placenta, and therefore your blood pressure, the pregnant person's blood pressure, can become dangerously high. To the point, preeclampsia means pre-eclampsia. Eclampsia is actually what used to be one of the things that killed women who were pregnant or in childbirth, so they could end up having seizures, having really major brain damage from how high their blood pressure was going. So your blood pressure was
sky high, and you got worried about that, and that was at 34 weeks. So we've learned, in fact, that preeclampsia predisposes you to a whole bunch of complications, both for your baby and yourself, mm-hmm. as time goes on. So you were probably scared, whatchamacallitless.
Yeah, I thought it was like a mistake. I just couldn't understand. You know, I made her repeat it maybe 4 or 5 times, because most women will have, like, their feet will be really swollen, they'll have severe headaches, and I had just had a normal day at work, you know, didn't really have any concerns. But ultimately, the safest thing was to deliver my daughter kind of emergently the next morning. And she was also very tiny, which again was just something that wasn't noticed because it was past the point where you're getting regular ultrasounds. And so suddenly I was thrust into this role of having a baby in the neonatal ICU, which for me was very unusual, because as a pediatric ENT, I spent a lot of time consulting in the NICU, mostly for very premature babies with airway problems. And so suddenly now I'm the mother of one of these babies, although she was doing pretty well. She never had to have a tube down her throat. But we spent about a month and a half having a child in the NICU, going back and forth between our home and our other children. This was 6 months before my cancer diagnosis. And I had just gone back to work after this kind of prolonged maternity leave for 4 months. So you're getting your sea legs back. You've had this shocking, you know, event occur. And then I had this little tiny preemie at home. And I was just kind of back on my game, ramped up my practice yet again. And then on a Saturday night, my mother called me that my father, who was a very brilliant, healthy, literally had no other problems except for maybe a slightly high cholesterol, 70-year-old male, had word-finding problems. And within a couple scans, it was clear that he had a glioblastoma, which is a malignant brain tumor. And
so now you've got preeclampsia, you've got a father with a brain tumor, and you've got a new child, a daughter, I think it was, in the neonatal intensive care unit, all serious problems. And then what happened?
So my father had his first brain surgery done, and 2 weeks later, 2 weeks after his initial diagnosis, only 1 week after his surgery, I was having trouble sleeping one night, and I inadvertently brushed my right hand against the left side of my chest, and there was a tumor. And I know what a tumor feels like, and it was really late at night. No one else was around. It was very surreal. And just kind of fast forward, the next day, I had a full day of surgery, but the breast radiologist at my institution at Westchester Medical Center stayed open so that I could go, you know, the next day straight into getting an ultrasound and a mammogram.
So
and I
that's
was only
a difference.
36.
Yeah, that's a difference that many patients can't get. They have to wait for a mammogram. So this is, at least you had, this is a difference and a benefit you had as a physician, if you will.
I definitely talk a lot about that in the book, at where I had advantages and then I had disadvantages, because in certain ways I shortcutted the system. And that sounds great, but then sometimes you shortcut how you are emotionally dealing with things, because you're just being so much in a certain doctor mode that you don't get processing time. And so with the diagnosis, I definitely was extremely lucky in terms of him, you know, doing this big favor, keeping keeping the center open and keeping some of his medical staff so that he could do an ultrasound and a mammogram right away and then a biopsy. Because basically, as soon as they did both of those imaging studies, it was clearly invasive cancer. It wasn't even, maybe it's just not invasive yet, it's pre-cancer. It was very clearly beyond that. And then I really did, again, use my connections within the medical world to quickly get appointments. I think that was really the only difference, was that you can wait months because breast tumors are most of the time very slow growing, and there's no day-to-day increased risk, but I just needed to get information and move along faster. And so I ultimately actually chose to have my surgery done all the way in Brooklyn at Maimonides Medical Center, even though I live in Westchester. And the reason for that is really amazing story, which is that my best friend from medical school had become a breast radiologist, slightly due to the influence I had on her in medical school and thinking that that was going to be this great profession for her, never thinking I would need it for myself. And her team was all in Brooklyn, and because of our relationship, I ended up going out to Brooklyn. But the truth is that just like all the New York, New Jersey area, so much of the doctors are shuffling around that the team out there was, you know, from Sloan Kettering and Cornell. And at the end of the day, though, although things moved so fast and it seemed so good, I actually had very advanced disease. And that was really, everything was happening at once, but the most shocking moment almost of all of it was when I got my pathology results and I had locally metastatic disease, pretty extensive. So it wasn't this, you caught it early, how wonderful, which is what everybody thought initially. And really, I was in this very different reality.
Now, a lot of the book is humorous. So let's go and talk a little bit about, did humor help you, or where was your humor, and how did you gain humor with this, serious a diagnosis?
So, of course, there were a lot of dark moments.
And I should say, not only serious a diagnosis, but three young children. We're talking, I should say, to Dr. Talia Lando. I shouldn't get too involved and not mention the name of the book, Hell and Back, Wife and Mother, Doctor and Patient, Dragon Slayer. HellandBackBook.com is the website. She's active on Instagram and Facebook, so you can read and see more about her. But humor comes through in the book. Where did you get that? How did it come about? Or were you always laughing at things as during life?
I don't think that I was. It's just the interesting thing about this journey was that there was a lot of dark moments and things that you could not laugh about. But then the ridiculous would happen. Some crazy problem that I would have, and sometimes it was my own doing, trying to be the doctor and solve my own problems and messing it up. There's a whole chapter where I talk about the fact that my father, who's not medical, and my mother used to go to his doctor appointments with this little spy pen where they would surreptitiously record everything that was being said. Then they would replay it. My father would type it and they would condense it and email it to the whole family. So they had this really sophisticated way of making sure that information did not get lost in their doctor's appointments. I, on the other hand, thought, well, I'm a doctor, and I'm going to remember everything that they say, and I don't need anyone to come with me. And as a result, I messed up a couple times on some very important things. And then there was just something so funny about the degree of my mistake that I just kept noting it. And these nuggets of what was happening, even in a very stressful, sad situation, were too obvious to me to be missed, and so I'd write them down as they occurred. And so it's just the book evolved to be this mixture of laughter and despair. And one of my favorite things when people read it, and I feel like I hear this a lot, is that they might laugh out loud one minute and then cry at another, because it's how life is. You know, it's not all sad and it's not all happy. And no matter how bad things are, if you can recognize even the absurdity, sometimes it's like a break that you need from, you know, the sorrow of losing your health and losing your father.
So one of the chapters is the Dirty Dozen. And the other one that I really loved was Parking Wars. Tell us about Parking Wars.
So Parking Wars was, I had initially, like many people when they have cancer, especially in the New York area, you have this immediate gut reaction. I got to go to the big house. You know, you got to go to Sloan Kettering. And I had that same impulse, although I'm a Westchester doctor trained in New York, and so I know that you don't have to go to Manhattan to get the care. But basically, I start my chemo in Manhattan, and I parked there with my mother across the street. It was insanely expensive, even with the hospital discount. And when I came back to my car, this is after like my first round of the Red Devil, which is Adriamycin. It's a very tough chemo. You're then given Benadryl for the allergic reaction that you can have, so you're just totally out of it. And also, the whole building is very confusing, and I've been on multiple levels during the same day. I get back to my car, and I can't find my wallet. And we had already given the parking attendant the ticket. So you'd think he'd be like, okay, you're a cancer patient. You can just run back across the street, go look for your wallet. And he was like, no. You have to get a new ticket and pay the price again. And my mother never curses. She's so polite and she's very proper. And it was just, again, it was just, she was just pushed all the way to her limit. You know, her husband has a brain tumor and her doctor daughter has breast cancer and is getting chemo at age 36. And then now the parking attendant won't let us like double park the car for a minute. And she just went completely ballistic, just hopped in the car, drove and blocked the entire exit of the parking garage, and then, you know, actually out loud said an entire curse sentence, which she never did. And again, I just felt like this is humorous. You can't, I did. And then ultimately we go all the way back over to the breast center, start searching for my wallet. And just as we're approaching the elevator, I realize in the fog of the chemo that I put my wallet in my mother's backpack. And so I hadn't lost it.
So you found it.
I found it. It was always there. But I think it was just this like triumphant moment for my mom that she could just, you know, sometimes you just have to let off that kind of steam. But the whole scene was as like some of my friends or my siblings who obviously know my mother very well, she would not even, I say this in the book, but it's true. It's like if a car drove over her pinky toe, she still wouldn't say the F-bomb. But in that moment, she just let it rip, and it was funny.
So the other book I know that is like this with humor is Humor After the Tumor by Patty Gelman. But this is hellandbackbook.com, Wife and Mother, Doctor and Patient, Dragon Slayer by Tally Lando Aronoff. Thanks very much, Tally, and thanks for sharing. There are a lot of insights, and what I took from the book is not only the humor, but all those things that you should do differently, if you will, when you get ill, and how to approach things in a very positive way, and a lot of tricks along the trade and things that you might think about doing differently. Thanks very much, Tally, for being on. HellandBackBook.com. This is 921B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. Thanks very much for Ben or Darian, whoever is doing it, for great engineering. I think they're sharing it today. And thank you for downloading us. Do rate us. Do tell your friends about us. Remember, the A segments are the latest news of the week and what it means to you. The B's are our great guests, like Dr. Tally Lando Aronoff. Tally Lando is how she goes. HellandBackBook.com. Great picture on the cover. Great stories inside. Thanks very much.